your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who suffer the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. This show is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, and always the message is, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. This show is pre-recorded, so you won't be able to call in today, but you can email us through our blog, thegriefblog.com. These shows are archived on our blog, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. All shows can be downloaded on iTunes, and transcripts can be accessed on thegriefblog.com. Well, good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Mom.
Oh, we've got two really interesting guests today, and we're going to talk about Compassionate Friends, Finding Hope Through Service. Our first guest is going to be Janice Gentry, who's a bereaved mother of Lori, and she's the regional coordinator of the Northern California Compassionate Friends chapter. And the wonderful thing is Janice is also a poet and author. Mm-hmm. Our second guest is going to be Tom Baer. Tom's son was murdered on the campus of the University of Tennessee in 1988. Tom Baer and his wife Margaret were fierce advocates for college campus safety. So, and he is on the National Board of Directors of the Compassionate Friends along with me. So I'm excited to have Tom come on to the show, too. And the grief blog is going so well. I mean, just the comments that people make to each other are just amazing, aren't they?
They are. And who better to answer these emails than people that have been there and been through these kind of things? And their responses are really wonderful.
Yeah, we really appreciate everyone logging in. And we're still getting more poetry on there. The poetry is amazing. We're keeping track of it and thinking that someday we might want to do a little book of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think
it's
that would be a great idea.
Yeah, it's going to be great to hear Janice is going to read one of her poems from her book, Stars in the Deepest Night, which is a really lovely little book of poetry. Well, Heidi, do you want to go ahead and introduce Janice?
Sure, I'd love to. As you said, Mom, our guest today is Janice Gentry, and our topic is Compassionate Friends, Finding Hope Through Service. In 1991, Janice Gentry's 21-year-old daughter, Lori, was killed in an automobile accident, leaving a surviving sibling, Megan. Since Lori's death, Janice has been involved in the Compassionate Friends. Janice is a Marin, California chapter leader and is the regional coordinator for Northern California. She is also a poet and author of Stars in the Deepest Night, After the Death of a Child. Welcome to the show, Janice.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you on the show, Janice, and it's wonderful. Through Compassionate Friends, I also have the honor of knowing you and the wonderful things that you do regionally for the Compassionate Friends. You want to talk a little bit about your daughter's death and how you got involved with Compassionate Friends?
Yes. Lori, as you just said, Lori died in 1991 in a car accident. And my husband and I started going to the Compassionate Friends meeting right away, which often people don't do, but my husband just felt the need to do that, and even more than I did.
I think that's really interesting. I read that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
Yeah, because Heidi and I find, well, if you look around at any kind of grief organization, you usually see three-fourths of them women, don't you?
Yes.
And you find that the men that do go initially went because their wives really, really wanted them to go.
Yes, definitely. But my husband actually went by himself the first time.
Good for him.
And what was so wonderful for me is that was where he kind of opened up, and I found out how he was feeling.
Mm-hmm. And listening to him at Compassionate Friends?
Yes.
Ah, now that's interesting. In the group, yeah, that kind of idea of kind of setting you apart a little bit from your spouse in that they can talk to other people and you hear.
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. So he went without you. How about your daughter? Did she go?
We didn't have there were no sibling groups, and she was only 15. And she just wasn't interested at all in doing something like that.
And how long after your daughter's death did you and your husband go to your first chapter meeting?
Bill went the very next month.
Okay.
How did he know about it?
We received something, I think we received a phone call from our chapter leader.
And did the chapter leader have a husband there, or was it a male?
she'd been chapter leader for years and years, and so she kind of came and brought the brownies and then left, and so, so she and her husband really, it had been a number of years, and so they didn't attend the meetings anymore, but when they started it together.
So how long did you go, and you ended up being not particularly wanting to go at first, and here you end up being a regional coordinator. Tell us about that.
Yes.
I wasn't that comfortable talking about my feelings. I'd never learned how to do that, but it didn't take very long before I realized it was really the only place where I could talk about Lori, talk about her death without, suddenly silence roaring up or somebody trying to change the subject. And so I realized very soon that it was a safe haven for me also, because I could, as I said, I could talk about those things, but I also started to find out tips for how to get through the holidays, what to say when somebody asked me how many children I had, and also the people that were further along down the road, I could look at them and say, oh, look, they're making it, so maybe I can too.
Now, what do you say to people who want to know how many children you have?
I say I have two, that my oldest daughter, Lori, was 21 when she died in a car accident, and my surviving daughter, Megan, lives in Davis and is a veterinarian.
Yeah, good for her. And I would think that would be a real issue for your daughter, Megan, because what does she say when people say, how many siblings do you have? I mean, it's a whole issue, okay, do I say I have one sister, and then, or do I say I don't have any, since she's now an only child to a certain extent, even though she'll always have a sister.
Right. Yeah, I think it's most people find that it's just individual, how they're feeling that day, what they want to say, or, who the person is that's asking. But I found that only one time did I say I had one, and I felt so guilty that I never said it again.
Mm-hmm. Now that's interesting that you felt that way, because some of our audience out there are saying, I do feel guilty about it and I don't say it, but it's kind of individual, isn't it?
Yeah, I hate guilt, and so I just do it, and I think saying it the way I do is not hard on people, because I'm ending on the positive note, so that they can then ask me what happened, or they can talk about Megan.
I love that idea.
The idea it works. It really does work.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem to make people uncomfortable.
Do you think Megan, your daughter, got into animals as a result of Lori's death? Got more into animals, or was she always into animals?
She was always into them.
Okay, because so many people tell us they get animals after the death of their children or siblings, because animals give us unconditional love.
Yes, yeah.
And also, for us, it was a way to bring something new in. And it's also a point of conversation for other people, too.
Absolutely. And sometimes when you've had a death, like when Scott died, people would see you and kind of not know what to say or run away. And once we got our little puppy, people ran towards us because they wanted to see the dog.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you, here your husband is, he gets you to go. That's a bit unusual, but how do you get somebody to go to group if you're going and you want them to go? What do you tell people? I bet you have people come to, compassionate friends and say, I really want my wife or my husband. How do I get them there? What do you say?
They don't even try. It really has to come from you. And, just being dragged to a meeting, I don't know. Maybe you could try it once. You could ask them to try it once. But what we do ask is people try it at least three times, because every meeting's different, and you're different every time, especially when you're newly bereaved, every time you go. And I found that, you know, there were times that it's our meetings were a half hour from my home. And sometimes, you know, you're in such lethargy and, you know, the last thing you want to do is to get out in the evening. But we were always really glad we did.
Now, I think there's something here about lead by example, too. I mean, if you want to do it, you do it, and hopefully the other person will see the benefit.
Yes, if they see that it's helping you, then maybe they'll go, too.
Yeah.
But I found, for me, that the most healing came when I was asked to facilitate the meetings. And that I
now, how far out were you then?
Around a couple years.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it felt pretty overwhelming. I felt like I still felt so newly bereaved that I had no idea how I was going to help anybody. And I think that was actually good for me because it made me just really work hard at it. And it made me come out of myself.
And being of service to others helped you, it sounds like, to heal.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love the Ralph Waldo Emerson quote that it's one of the most beautiful compensations of life, that no man can sincerely try to help another without helping himself.
Mm, I like that.
Very nice. Now, did your husband do any leadership?
No. No. When I was actually asked to facilitate, neither of us were going consistently anymore. We had decided we'd gotten everything out of TCF that we were going to get, which I'm so glad to find out that was such a mistake, because I actually feel the healing started later. I feel that, you know, if you're part of the steering committee or chapter leader or helping with the candle lighting, all of those things are so healing.
Well, I want to talk to, when we come back from break, I want to talk a little bit more with you, Janice, about what the requirements are if people want to work in Compassionate Friends or start a chapter or whatever because of the wonderful benefits from it. And we're talking to Janice Gentry today about the Compassionate Friends Finding Hope Through Service. You can reach us through our blog, thegriefblog.com. Remember, you can download these these on iTunes. This is a pre-record today, so you won't be able to call in, but we hope that you will email us any comments or questions you have for Janice Gentry about being involved with the Compassionate Friends and leadership. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Hi, my name is Rachel Hibbard. I'm a graduate student in the psychology department at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. If you've lost a loved one and are over 18 years old, I would like to invite you to participate in a brief online study of religious coping with bereavement. Your participation will contribute to a better understanding of grief and loss, and you'll have the option of being entered in a raffle to win a $100 gift certificate to Amazon.com. If you're interested, please go to www.thegriefblog.com for further information. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking today with Janice Gentry about compassionate friends finding hope through service. Janice's 21-year-old daughter, Lori, was killed in an automobile accident. Welcome back to the show, Janice and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Janice, it's so great to have you on. And Heidi and I have just enjoyed, we had a poetry contest, and Janice was one of our judges. And it was really wonderful having you do that for us, Janice.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's an honor.
I love your book, Stars in the Deepest Night, After the Death of a Child. Now, tell us how people would get a hold of this book.
It can actually be ordered at any bookstore, either online or on land, as I say. And or through me, you can just put Stars in the Deepest Night into a search engine, and it will bring up my website.
I mean, it's got wonderful poetry that you kind of through the loss, you wrote the poems at different times, right?
Yes, and I give credit to the Compassionate Friends for the poems also, because I don't think it's a coincidence that 9 months after I started facilitating, the poems started coming, and I had never written poetry before.
Oh, you hadn't? That's amazing.
It is. I just assumed you'd always done this.
Yeah. I mean, wonderful things about the first Christmas and my children. It's just great. And we're going to have Janice read one of her poems right now. Now, this is from a new book you're doing?
No, this one is actually from Stars in the Deepest Night.
Okay.
And it's called The Promise. Your birth brought me starshine, the moon, and the sun. My wishes, dreams gathered round my little one. My life became sacred, full of promise and light, all wrapped in the girl child who brought love at first sight. The years of your living filled with laughter and tears, excitement, adventure, some boredom, some fears, but ended too quickly ahead of its time. The loss so horrendous, such heartbreak was mine. But from the beginning, one thought rose so clear. Never would your death erase the years that you were here. I would not be defeated or diminished by your death. I would hang on, learn to conquer if it took my every breath. For if your death destroyed my life, made both our lives a waste, 'twould deny your life's meaning and all the love you gave. I vowed that years of sadness would change with work and grace to years of happiness, even joy, in which you'd have a place. Memories of you, like shining stars in the patterns of my soul, are beacons flashing light and love, and with them I am whole. In your honor, I live my life, now living it for two. Through all my life, you too will live. You lived, you live, you do.
Oh, that's really beautiful.
That's wonderful.
Now, this has been 17 years, is that right?
Yes, next month it will be 17 years.
Actually
this month, since this will be in June.
And what about that? What about people saying, oh, she's a professional griever, she's still involved with that Compassionate Friends group?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you say to people?
You know, it does come up. I, you know, at meetings especially, they're thinking, oh, no, I'm going to be at the meetings this long. And so I really do try to say that, you know, explain that I am now in the helping part of the Compassionate Friends, and that's how the Compassionate Friends works, that if you don't stay on to help, that it wouldn't be.
Absolutely. It's been 24 years for me, and I'm on the board. And I really feel like at this point it is a great service project to help other people through this process.
Right, I think we're holding the hope for others, the hope that they will have light in their lives again eventually.
Yes.
Yeah, and how about the hope for the siblings, Hyde?
Absolutely, yes, that we'll never, ever forget our brothers and sisters. We don't want to forget them. We're going to integrate them in our lives in new ways, and have different relationships with them and continue bonds in a different way.
Absolutely.
And don't you think that that's really one of the fears that we all have, is that they will be forgotten, and that only in your family that you know, their names will be spoken? And I think when we do these things through TCF, we're keeping their names out there in the world, and the work that we're doing, we do in their honor, and so that their lives keep they matter because what we do is important.
Now, what kind of things can I do if I'm in a chapter, or say, you know, I'm out there even a couple of years, or I'm newly bereaved? What can I do with Compassionate Friends? You know, I can come and sit, and I don't have to speak, and I don't have to do anything. But what if I want to do something?
If you want to do something, you can always help at the meetings by helping set up at the beginning and put things away. You can bring things to eat, snacks for people, and eventually you can get onto the steering committee and be part of making the decisions. You can also help at the candle lighting in December.
Which is a wonderful event.
Yes.
You can do a newsletter. You can write an article for the newsletter.
Absolutely, write articles for the newsletter. There are lots of things, and if you just express a little interest, I'm sure.
Yeah, and what about the people that say, it's only once a month, it's not enough for me?
Well, that is a problem, and some chapters actually meet more than once a month. What we do is we have walks the first Saturday of every month, where we all get out together and walk and then go to lunch together.
So you can find out what the groups are doing, and you can organize different things yourself for the groups to do.
Right.
And also, if you get involved in newsletters and things, you can be in more contact with people if you want to. There are ways. It's when you're ready to give service that you'll find you're very busy with it. But, you know, that may be a while. You were saying that you started facilitating it 2 years.
Yes, and I don't think that you know, I think they ask that you're around 2 years, or maybe a little bit before that, before you even consider trying to open up a chapter or facilitating.
However, I was saying to Heidi that Candy Leitner started MAD in 3 days.
Well, in a way, I think, you know, it keeps you from grieving if you just really get into something.
And that's what Candy said, too.
She said that exact thing.
Yes, I think you need to have time to really be self-absorbed and self-centered and just try to find ways to heal by listening to other people. Because once you're a facilitator, you're not there to talk about yourself anymore. You're there to really listen and get other people to open up. And so you heal in a different way. So if you haven't done that first part, then when will that get done?
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay to be self-absorbed when when you're really in pain and you need to do that. Grief is hard work.
It is hard work.
So how do people find out about Compassionate Friends?
Well, hopefully there are chapters all over this country and in other parts of the world, and word of mouth, but also hopefully people have something in their newspapers and get their newspapers to write articles. And in our chapter, we have someone who sends out packets when they either call our number or if we find out from either the people or from someone else what the parents' address is. We send out a packet.
Now, you can also go on the national website of the Compassionate Friends, and we also want to remind you that there is a national conference, right, this year in July?
Yes.
And that will be in, where are we having it?
It's in Nashville.
Nashville. Yeah, I wanted to say Tennessee, but I was thinking of the city.
Yeah.
Nashville, Tennessee in July. So that's, and anyone can go to that. It'll be a wonderful conference. You'll be there, Janice?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, and if you want to go on to the Compassionate Friends website, they have bios of the speakers. The speakers are going to be phenomenal this year.
And they're going to have some wonderful music. I was looking at that.
As I'm sure you'll agree, it's just taking a little vacation with your child, getting to wear their picture and talk about them and listen to other people. It's just such a special little oasis of time every year.
It is, and you can also kick back and go to your room for an hour, too.
Absolutely.
Mean, you don't have to be involved
sometimes
with everything.
Sometimes you need to, especially if you're newly bereaved, you need to do that.
Right.
And, Janice, I love what you just said, taking a vacation with your child. Now, of course, immediately I thought surviving child, but you're talking about your children out there that have died.
Absolutely.
I love that idea.
And Bill and I actually many times have used it as, you know, we fly to that place, and then we get a car and go see the area. So it feels like it's another chance to see the world because of Lori.
Yeah.
Right.
And also, don't forget about taking the siblings, right, Heidi?
I was going to say, yes, one of the ways that a lot of the kids, you can get a lot of the kids there, especially the teenagers, is just to let them know there will be a certain amount of time that they'll be able to tour and sightsee and see the area.
Mm-hmm.
They love that idea.
They do, and wonderful sibling programs. And Heidi, you'll be doing a workshop, right, on siblings?
Yeah, I'll be doing a workshop for the teens, and there'll be lots of events that they're going to do, fun things, fun activities outside of the conference where the siblings are going to go.
Mm-hmm. And Janice, are you presenting?
Yes.
And what are you presenting?
I will present on the monthly meeting for steering committee members or just people that want to find out how to run a monthly meeting. And as I have in previous years, I've co-presented with Kathy Seehooter on mm-hmm. journaling, writing as a form of healing, and with Dr. Richard Dew, mm-hmm. who wrote Rachel's Cry. We do the one on poetry.
Yeah, and we've had both of those people, Richard and Kathy, on our show as guests in the past.
Yeah, so that'll be a wonderful event. Well, do you have any advice, particularly that you like for grieving parents, that you'd like to give out there, or grandparents or siblings?
Oh, advice. Just to keep on keeping on, and you know, to just, it's such work. It's you know, it's just not something you can get over it by forgetting about it or trying to think of something else. It's something you just have to do. You have to slog through it. And it takes so many years, longer than most people think. And to not be disheartened when people just think, other people who don't know, think you should just be over it.
Well, thank you for being on the show, Janice Gentry, and it's been great. And we wanted to close the show with having you read another piece of poetry. Is this from your new book, or is this from Stars?
Yes, I'm hoping a new book will come out by the end of the year. And this book will be the poems that came after Stars in the Deepest Night, and kind of reflect where I've been and where I am now. And this one is called The Space Between Thoughts and shows where I am now.
Okay.
You are no longer in my thoughts constantly. You are now dwelling in the space between thoughts, a part of my every moment, whether joyful or sad, or in between, or both simultaneously. I walk, talk, work, play, and you surround me. You are in the sparkle of my smile, the wisdom in my thinking, the rainbow circles in my life. As I breathe and live, you breathe and live. As I learn, you are teaching, not only me, but all those who are in my life today. You are a blessing, dear child, for all you were and all you are and all you forever will be.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Janice, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Janice. Both of you. This has been such an honor.
Thank you. Well, please stay tuned for our next segment, where we'll continue to discuss finding hope through service with Compassionate Friends. And our guest will be Tom Baer. Tom's son was murdered at the University of Tennessee in 1988, and he has become a very big victims advocate. Stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Save the date. The Compassionate Friends 31st National Conference will be held July 18th through 20th, 2008, in the home of country music, Nashville, Tennessee. If you've experienced the devastating death of a child in your family, you will not want to miss the weekend of friendship, understanding, and hope, when more than 1,200 people just like you will join together. Said one person in describing last summer's 2007 National Conference, there was so much love and compassion, you could feel it in the air. To learn more about the 2008 National Conference, the pre-conference professional outreach day, and the popular 2-mile walk to remember, visit CompassionateFriends.org or call 877-969-0010. Detailed information on the conference will be posted to the national website as it becomes available.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010. That's 877-969-0010.
800-273-0010 to order a set or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Who are we? What really matters? Is it possible to find true happiness after a great loss? The answers to some of life's most important questions are explored in Space Between Breaths, a powerful, uplifting film which looks at the potential in grief and to the ways it can become a motivational, transformational force in our lives. Featuring conversations with parents who have lost a child, including those whose loved ones died at Columbine on September 11th, and a mother whose son was one of the first U.S. soldiers to die in Iraq. Space Between Breaths offers an inspired and healing perspective on loss, which will transform the way you live and love. For information on ordering the film, visit the website www.spacebetweenbreaths.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria. For those of you just joining us today, our topic is Compassionate Friends, Finding Hope Through Service. And our second guest is Tom Baer. After the murder of his son, Thomas, on the campus of the University of Tennessee in 1988, Tom Baer and his wife, Margaret, became fierce advocates for college campus safety in Tennessee and at the national level, getting legislation passed in the state and in Congress to make college campuses safer. They didn't stop there. They also took up crime victims' rights. Tom now serves on the National Board of Directors for the Compassionate Friends. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hi, thank you, Heidi.
Hi, Tom. It's great to have you on the show, and it is also great to be on the board of the Compassionate Friends with you. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about your son's death. He was murdered on the campus. How did that happen?
Yes, he was. It was the day the students returned to school in 1988 at the fraternity house, and as many of the fraternities did, they would have a keg of beer. There was an intruder, a young man who was not a student, liked to hang around the campus. He came over looking for beer. The brothers got him to leave, and he had pulled a knife. So they called the police. The police came and then went looking for the young man. They actually found him but didn't recognize him and turned him loose across the street. He came back to the fraternity house, tried to get in again. My son was standing at the door to keep him out, and the young man pulled a knife and stabbed him in the heart. The police arrived on the scene 12 seconds later, and they captured his assailant. So the young man was jailed immediately, and we got a second-degree murder conviction 11 months later.
Mm-hmm. 11 months, that's pretty early.
It was, in fact, there were no continuances at all in the trial.
Uh-huh.
But on the other side, 11 months must have seemed like an eternity for this to go on. I mean, I'm just wondering what your life looked like during those 11 months.
Well, life pretty much became a disaster for quite a while. Mm-hmm. We lived in Louisville, Kentucky at the time. We had lived in Knoxville before, and that's why our son had chosen to go to the University of Tennessee. And we had difficulty getting information from the campus police. Now, this was handled by the campus police, not the city police or the county sheriff, because in Tennessee, state university police forces are chartered police forces and have every bit as much power as the city police or the county sheriffs do. And so they were handling it. We couldn't get any information about what was going on.
I was going to say, I would think campus police would want to keep everything really, really quiet. Is that true?
That's true.
Okay.
We had great difficulty getting information and finding out what was going on. A good friend of mine in Louisville happened to be a prominent attorney, asked me what he could do, and I said, help me find out what's going on. Well, shortly after my attorney made phone calls, I started getting phone calls from the university, from top university officials asking me to quit making waves. Mm-hmm. at about the same time, we saw on a national TV show Howard and Connie Cleary, the parents of Jeannie Cleary, who had been raped and murdered in her dorm room at Lehigh in 1986. They are the founders of Security on Campus Incorporated, which is a nonprofit nationwide company that promotes campus safety. We worked with the Clearys and were able to get a bill through the Tennessee legislature in early 1989, only about 6 months after Tommy's death, to improve campus safety in Tennessee. And Tennessee became only the second state after Pennsylvania to have that type of law.
Wow.
We continued to work together with the Clearys, and in 1990, we got the bill through the Congress, and it was the Student Right to Know and Campus Security Act of 1990, which was the beginning of the what became the rules put out by the Department of Education for campus safety.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens if the universities choose not to comply? They lose their federal funds.
Mm-hmm.
So the first teeth we put in it was put in jeopardy their federal funds. It took another 10 years to get, and three more amendments to get more teeth into the law.
So you've been working on that the whole time?
We have. We've worked on this continually from 1988 on. The teeth now are that Department of Education can issue fines up to $25,000 a day for noncompliance with the rules and regulations.
But you still have to kind of keep on it keep it going.
That's what Security on Campus Incorporated does, is they watch nationally what goes on all the campuses. They review the statistics. They also run training programs. Just yesterday at Temple University, there were over 300 educators from higher institutions of learning that were there for a seminar taught by a senior vice president from Security on Campus to teach these people how to comply with the what's informally known as the Jeannie Cleary Act.
Yeah, this has got to be a very hot issue with everything that's been going on nationally for the past couple of years.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think back to Virginia Tech, I think to so many things that have gone on. What do you think could have been done differently the night that Thomas died to prevent his death?
Well, the first thing is, in Tennessee, it's against the law to have alcohol on campus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So the fact that they had alcohol there, had the kegs of beer, not with university blessing, but with sort of a benign neglect.
Right.
They chose not to enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
We put a lot of pressure on the university, and they now do enforce the rules. In fact, one of the things that's now a local issue here is for non-college events, they're wanting to open up the basketball arena here, Thompson Bowling Arena, which seats about 40,000 people, when they have concerts and things to allow them to sell beer. That was proposed, and the whole proposal has been withdrawn because the university got such a hue and cry from the public here that we don't really want that. This is the mm-hmm. university. You've got a no alcohol policy.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like that your anger, were you angry when he was killed? I mean, did you have a lot of anger?
Did have a lot of anger. It was angry that Tommy was dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We learned pretty quickly that the young man that killed him had been a troubled youth, and there was little or no premeditation that you could see, and the young man needed some help. Well, he got a lot of that help in jail.
Mm-hmm. You dealt with your anger by becoming an advocate, would you say? Because Heidi and I always talk about how men tend to maybe do.
Well, I've always been a doer,
mm-hmm.
and actually my wife was also very much a doer. She spotted what was going on, and she's the one that saw the TV show, and she became a continuous fierce advocate for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you guys start going to Compassionate Friends?
We started going to Compassionate Friends within the first year.
Yeah, because I was wondering how you took care, you know, the anger and the advocacy, and then there's the personal pain of dealing with that.
Well, one of the things that we learned somewhere along the path, and I can't say when it happened, that we had to somehow separate the work we were doing from dealing with our own grief.
Mm-hmm. Because Candy Leitner, you know, who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving, told Heidi and I that she delayed her own grief with MAD. But it sounds like you were able to go into your grief with Compassionate Friends, which is interesting. It's for our audience out there, if they're doing advocacy work or thinking about it, they might think about their own personal.
Well, you really have to think of your own personal. But I will tell you that we got stuck.
Mm-hmm.
We got stuck by the judicial system. We got the conviction, mm-hmm. and then we were putting our, and a 17-year sentence was issued, and we started putting our efforts into trying to heal.
Mm-hmm.
I had been recalled to active duty in the Navy for a year, and long about March of 91, I got a phone call from a reporter in Knoxville that said, "Do you know that Jeff Underwood is coming up for parole?" This is less than 3 years after Tommy was killed.
Wow.
And we said no. We then immediately began putting together what it was going to take to be able to oppose parole. It turns out in East Tennessee, we were the first people ever to show up at a parole hearing to oppose parole.
Is that right?
It had never happened in the eastern part of Tennessee.
That's amazing to me.
They did not know how to run an opposed parole hearing.
Wow.
His parole was denied, but he came up again quickly. Well, by this time, we learned how to put on a real campaign. We went through 6 parole hearings in 5 years, keeping this
young
man in jail. He finally got out after 7 years, 2 months.
That's unbelievable. So he killed your son and only served 7 years.
Served 7 years
of a sentence. What was the sentence?
The sentence was 17.
Oh my goodness.
The bad part of that was at 7 years, 2 months, he had served the average time for second degree murderers in Tennessee.
Wow.
You know, it's time for us to go up for a break, and when we come back from break, we want to hear more from Tom Baer about Compassionate Friends and Finding Hope Through Service, and hear more about how he and his wife, Margaret, dealt with their son's murderer coming up for probation. Probation, yes. So please stay tuned for more. You can reach us through our blog, thegriefblog.com, and you can also download all these shows on the archives from our blog and from the Compassionate Friends website. Stay tuned for more and to hear about next week's special guest.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Who are we? What really matters? Is it possible to find true happiness after a great loss? The answers to some of life's most important questions are explored in Space Between Breaths, a powerful, uplifting film which looks at the potential in grief and to the ways it can become a motivational, transformational force in our lives. Featuring conversations with parents who have lost a child, including those whose loved ones died at Columbine on September 11th, and a mother whose son was one of the first U.S. soldiers to die in Iraq. Space Between Breaths offers an inspired and healing perspective on loss, which will transform the way you live and love. For information on ordering the film, visit the website www.spacebetweenbreaths.com.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Hello, my name is Dinah Taylor, and I'm a bereaved parent. We would like to invite all of you to the University of the Cumberlands in Williamsburg, Kentucky, on June the 6th and 7th for our 15th annual GEMS Conference to celebrate the lives of our children we have lost too soon. JIMS Conference stands for Joining in Memory. On June the 6th, Cindy Bullins will be giving a concert in memory of our children. June the 7th, the documentary Space Between Breaths will be shown, and we will have workshops such as Losing Your Religion After Losing Your Child, How I Have Survived the First Year, a workshop for men only, and another workshop, Signs from Our Children. We will also rededicate a park that has bricks in memory of our children. We will have a balloon release, an earth ceremony, and a surprise at our Christmas Box Angel statue. You can get more information by going to the website https://www.ucumberlands.edu/lamentations/, and go under JIMS Conference information. Hope to see you there. May you have a good day. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria. We're here today with Tom Baer talking about Compassionate Friends Finding Hope Through Service. Welcome back to the show, Tom and Gloria.
Thank you very much.
Well, Tom, when we went to break, we were talking about your son Thomas being murdered on the campus of the University of Tennessee and how the man that murdered him was up for parole, and was it 7 years?
He served 7 years, 2 months, and between the 3-year point and the 7-year, 2-month point, we went through 6 parole hearings.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
So how did you feel when he got parole? And
we knew it was going to happen at some point. We had asked that he stay in until he was 30. He got out at 27. One of the things we had done was researched the data on recidivism of criminals, and mm-hmm. we found that there is a direct correlation between the age of the offender and when they get out, whether they recommit offenses or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it really drops down rather dramatically, and if people get to the age 30, there's a much lower chance of them committing another crime.
Now,
this
Tom,
young man has
you
not, by the way, committed any other
crime.
A little
strange. When he got out, were you concerned that he may retaliate? Because you kind of kept him in as long as you could.
No, because we felt we got to learn a little bit more about him through the parole hearings.
Mm-hmm.
And we came to learn that he really wasn't a bad kid. He was a kid that had been misguided as a youth. Came from a pretty good family. His father mm-hmm. had been a police officer.
Wow.
And he had gone the wrong way. And through his activities in the prison, and he had been on some work release programs and working with AA and NA, he had turned his life around somewhat. So, and he's not been in any trouble since he got out.
Now, do I hear some forgiveness there?
That's thank you, Mom. That's what I was hearing.
Yeah.
So you feel like you found some forgiveness?
Yeah. We were looking to hear from him during the parole hearings. Some sign of remorse on his part.
Uh-huh.
I think that he was trying to get there, but his attorney and his father were not letting him make
I was going to say, sometimes the attorneys tell him not to do that.
Well, they did that.
Yeah, not to get in touch with the family.
Yeah.
Well, tell me, just for the sake of time, what happened with Compassionate Friends? And you said you got stuck.
Well, we got stuck in our grief because you can only go so far through the grief process when you keep being jerked back by the system.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say to people out there who are in this situation right now?
To work very hard at separating your dealing with the justice system and in whatever form, and separate that from doing your own grief work.
Mm-hmm. And would you say Compassionate Friends might be a good way to do that?
Compassionate Friends is a great way to do that. what we found in Compassionate Friends was people that were people that were willing to listen to our story over and over and over. When I first started telling the story, and people hated to sit next to me on an airplane, it took me 45 minutes. I can tell the story of Tommy's murder now in about 2 or 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the more times you tell it, the closer to acceptance you get.
And it's not always easy for a guy, particularly, to find an audience, is it?
No, it's not. The one thing a lot of people don't understand, and the press, as you know, like to use the word closure. Well, did the trial get you closure? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
If bereaved parents can do anything that have had to deal with the justice system, is to teach people that there's no such thing as closure.
Well, and we had a guest on our show, Bob Niemeyer, who said closure is for bank accounts, not love accounts.
Well, that's right. And real estate deals.
There you go.
What I tend to tell people is it's like the soldier that's gone to Iraq and he's lost a leg. And you fit him with a prosthesis. So when he's dressed up and pair of long pants and shoes, you can't tell he doesn't have a leg.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody says he's over it. He's not over it.
Yeah.
He's right. Just learned to live with it.
Yeah. So what was your progress like with Compassionate Friends? You're on the board now. Were you active with it, and would you have any recommendations for people as far as the organization goes?
Or? I think they should find the nearest Compassionate Friends group and participate fully. We did that immediately. We were not afraid to look for help where help was needed, and we recognized we needed it. I would recommend anybody that has the opportunity to go to the national conference. There's no subject that we don't cover. I know a lot of people that have been to their first national conference, and that was the first time that they felt like they could see the light at the end of the tunnel, even though it was a long tunnel.
Now, do you see in your chapter men? Are there more women in there, and do you see men more reluctant to come? And what would you say about that?
The men are much more reluctant to come, and it's difficult to get them to come. I've called a number of them. Our typical chapter meeting, we'll have a small meeting, as if we only have 20 or 25 people.
Mm-hmm. So you have a big chapter.
We've got a big chapter, and the chapter's been here in Knoxville since 1986.
And I would think if men see other men there, then you're going to get more men in the future.
That's right. And for a long time, we had a huge number of people whose kids had been killed. At one point, we had 9 families whose children had been murdered.
Wow.
A lot of chapters. When we went to our first annual conference, we only found maybe half a dozen people nationally who had had children murdered.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case anymore. Dr. Richard Dew and I started conducting sharing sessions just on our own, and afterwards were asked to now speak and talk about healing after homicide.
Well, you know, I think one thing about Compassionate Friends for me is you come to realize that there's a certain depth of loss that it doesn't matter how they were killed.
Absolutely. No matter how your child died, that's the worst thing that could happen to you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Whether it's a miscarriage or it's a 95-year-old mother with a 70-year-old son who's killed in a car accident, their grief's the same.
Mm-hmm. And it's their grief. It's their personal grief. Someone asked me, what I thought about a spouse's grief versus a child's grief. I said, the grief you have is the worst grief you have.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know,
somebody who has both lost a child and a spouse, I had heard this from other people, but I know now personally, losing the child hurts worse.
Mm-hmm.
You expect at some point that one of you in your marriage will go.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe when you're 80 or 90, you never expect to lose the child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, before we close our show, do you have one piece of advice for guys out there and families in general? And maybe you could say something a little bit about siblings, too.
Well, for guys and siblings, because in a lot of ways they have the same response. They don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate. I'd spent a lot of time with the Boy Scouts. I really didn't have to talk about it, but I was surrounded by a bunch of men that had worked with me in Scouts that became sort of a support group outside of Compassionate Friends. And they weren't afraid to bring up my son's name. And for the siblings, I know you're not going to talk to your parents, but talk to your friends. Talk to somebody about it. Talk to your teacher. Mm-hmm. It's not your job as a sibling to become the parent to the parent.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's a good point, isn't it, Hyde?
Absolutely, I like that. You know, talk to somebody and don't. We're always wanting to take care of our parents and worried so much about our parents that I think sometimes we put our own grief on hold, just as you did with the homicide investigation, et cetera,
yeah,
and the trial. We put our own grief on hold sometimes and don't take care of ourselves enough and look at our own grief.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been great having you on, and I look forward to seeing you at Nashville.
Okay, looking forward to seeing you too, Gloria. Thank you, Heidi.
Thanks, Tom.
It's time to close our show, and I want to thank Janice Gentry and Tom Baer. Please stay tuned in again next week when our guest will be Leslie Matos, founder of Adizio Albums, and Luella Hoffman, who will talk about special dreams. This show is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Denise and Tom, thank you both for being of service to others and helping others feel at home.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on the Grief.